Hey, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Beloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. This is the night. On this, the 45th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King. I know you've heard this a thousand times today. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. speech, the I Have a Dream speech. Let's listen. Michael McDonald is on the stage at the stadium. Let's listen to this for a second. Now, see, that ought to be the national anthem, America's Beautiful, not the Star-Spangled Banner, all that screaming and yelling and bombs, red glare, and blah, 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 blah. So, there's just too much emotion afoot for me. There really is. And I'm still getting a ton of emails from people who are trying to point that out to me, who are trying to say, Mike, you have to understand something. While these candidates may have the same backers, they may have the same interests from corporate America, the difference between them is the difference between night and day. And I don't think they were trying to draw a racial allusion there. But I agree. I mean, it's very difficult to not, and I've said this over and over and over again, it's very difficult not to be hooked by or caught into or get enthused about the emotional aspect of all this. There are going to be close to 90,000 people in the stadium tonight, and it's my for Barack Obama's speech. It's my understanding that the McCain group in St. Paul, Minnesota, is trying to give away. They can't even fill a 10,000 seat venue. They're trying to give away tickets. Now, I realize the report is out there that the Obama campaign made available an extra 20,000 tickets. That was beyond the 75,000. I wrote something snarky at my mini blog today. I really don't know what the hell is going on. This is way beyond me. There's a part of me that honestly, truly, deeply wants to just be so freaking proud of the fact that my white brothers and sisters in this country were able to look past their racism, because all white people in this country have it. Come on, let's not even get into that. And elect nominate, in a sense, the person that they thought would be the better candidate out of that whole group. Now, to political sophisticates, maybe Barack Obama is not the best choice. And I don't put myself in that category. I'm a political critic, because I have been, I had my brains dashed against the wall so many times. And just like the thing I read from Bridget last night, I just want to believe. Every time I say that, though, I wind up getting bashed against the wall again. Every single time. I don't care if it's congressional races, Senate races, and certainly it's true in the presidential races. So corporateness of everything is a turnoff to me. The slickness of everything is a turnoff to me. The phony configurations of everything is a turnoff to me. But beyond that, you know, I can't help but get sucked in. If sucked in is the proper phrase, maybe Barack Obama is genuine and from the heart. And every time I hear that, every time I hear that in my own head, I have to pull myself back from that emotional break and say, no, wait a second, Malloy, get a grip. Because look at his advisors, look at his votes, look at this, look at that, look at the other thing. But there's a strong part of me that just wishes the hell I could sit back on my ass tonight along with everybody else and celebrate the fact that, yes, a man of color has been nominated to and will probably wind up being president of the United States. I never, ever, 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 like so many black folk have said today, I never thought I'd live to see that. Never thought I'd live to see that. And the other thing that takes me right to the emotional brink today is the fact that this is the 45th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech. Now, I remember that march on Washington. That was a poor people's march. That was a march for jobs and justice and stuff. It was not necessarily a civil rights march. It was a poor people's march. It was. I doubt if I heard the whole thing back in 63. Was it 63? Yeah, I think it was 63. Yeah, it would have to be. This is the 45th anniversary. See, I'm losing it. It's just been a very weird, strange day for me today. I doubt back in 63 if I actually heard the speech. I probably heard it on the nightly news or the next day or 2 weeks later or what have you. But the fact that Americans of some African descent, especially those of a certain age, have lived to see this is just absolutely astounding to me. Because I do remember what 1963 was like in this country. I remember what 65 and 66 and 67 was like in this country. In terms of how black folk were treated and how they were disrespected. This is going to put enormous awareness into the minds of so many people when Barack Obama is elected president. Into black folk and into white people. It is going to put an awareness that we have never had, none of us, not black nor white in this country. And I'm using that racial breakdown because the blacks and the whites in this country, we're the ones that have had the struggle for 350 years. I realize there are other ethnic and racial groups now, religious groups, yada, yada, yada. But the black-white issue is the issue in this country. It always has been. And up until this nomination, one could have said it always will be. I've said that. I've said that as recently as a couple, 3 months ago. Well, they'll never nominate him because America is not ready to A, face its past, but also B, face its future and say, okay, you know, let's vote the man. Let's look past the skin color. In the past couple of months, I've had the weirdest thing happen to me. And I tried to articulate this out in Seattle at that conference we all did. And that is that there are times when I'm thinking about Barack Obama and figure out some way to criticize his voting record and label him as just another corporate Democrat where I forget what color he is. And it happens. And to me, just in my little tiny infinitesimal little teeny weensy slice of life over here in the corner of the universe, to me, that is amazing that I can think of Barack Obama as a political candidate and not as a black political candidate. That's amazing to me. And the moments are brief. And then as soon if I'm thinking about him, as soon as his image floats up in my head, oh, sure, of course I see that he's got some African aspects to him. But in those brief moments, for me, a white person, a Caucasian, to think of him in that manner is astonishing to me. And I certainly don't. I don't say that as a way of being self-congratulatory, not by any means. It just is. It's just a little mini fact in my tiny little slice of the universe over here. And I think that's happened to a lot of white people. And that's a mark of progress. Barack Obama may turn out to be Adolf Hitler. I don't know. But the fact that so many white people were able to move past the one thing that could have prevented his being nominated above all others, his race, is to me astonishing. I can't imagine, or let me rephrase it, I can only imagine how black folk in this country must feel tonight to know, holy jumping God, look at this. Those 85, 90,000 people that are crowding into that corporate name stadium that was probably built on a former property where poor people had their houses ripped down and thrown in a dump heap to make way for the rich, overpaid, whiny-ass professional sports players. I know all that. I know that. I know what Invesco Field is. I know what Mile High Stadium is. I understand the bread and circuses thing. I know it's all illusion. It's all a goddamn joke. I know that. And yet, through all of that, you know, a couple of times today, just a burning reality hit me right between the eyes. My God, Barack Obama is going to be the next president. Yeah.
Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Twenty-one past the hour. When Barack Obama does give his speech tonight, we will obviously we will cover it with the attendant commercial breaks because we have to stick with the format, you know. A couple of emails here that have really added to my own personal confusion today, and I bring this up. None of this is about me, except for the fact that I'm an American, and you know, the future of my life and my children, my grandchildren, depends on what happens in this country politically. Only to that extent. So to that extent, it's about you and it's about me as much as it is about Barack Obama or John McCain or whomever, or the rich corporatists or what have you. So. It is impossible for me to divorce myself from this this whole spectacle, and it is a spectacle. You can use that word negatively or positively; it's your call. But it is a spectacle. It's a massive spectacle. It is at once uplifting and frightening and down pushing. You can ride the whole roller coaster of emotions in watching this, if you are or were or. Or thought you were a Democrat or a liberal or a progressive. That's the biggest fault, I think, of traditional Democrats, which would be define itself as liberals and progressives, is that constant sense of hope. I hope this time it works. I'm going to try again. I hope this time it works. That's what liberals are about. That's what progressives are about. Progress, progressive. Trying it again and again and again. Tweaking it here, changing it here, trying it again. Conservatives or Republicans are terrified of their own shadows. And what they have done damn near is convince the entire country to be afraid of itself. Be afraid of everything. And that's one of the reasons I hate Republicans so much, is because every single one of them is a fear-mongering coward. Every single Republican is a coward. And you know, I'm sure they feel they are justified in their cowardice. But, I don't want to go there. I'm paranoid, sure. Aren't you? Jesus, with what has happened, now we're about inches away from war with Russia. I wonder where the Union of Concerned Scientists have placed the atomic clock tonight, for God's sake. But, so anyway, here we are. Just rivers of confusion washing all over the political landscape for anyone who thinks or feels or both. And I think that's certainly what's going on with me. I want to share some of these emails with you, Mike. This is from Eric in Ohio. I just wanted to clarify something you said last night. I think the corporations that fund both major political parties do issue a different set of orders to each. What Eric's referring to, I said, screamed, "You think they tell the Republicans to do this, Democrats to do that?" Well, Eric says, yeah. He says, "I think they do tell the Democrats to continue to support the pro-choice position and the Republicans to support the so-called pro-life position. The corporations don't care if women get abortions or not. But it's one of the wedge issues they use to keep us fighting each other instead of fighting their grip on our government. As long as they're fighting each other, we won't notice that they've ordered their puppets to deregulate and privatize everything for their benefit. We can't afford to drive our cars or feed our families or keep a roof over our heads. But none of that matters because Barack Obama is the change we can believe in. I remember another inspiring presidential candidate who is going to lead America to the promised land. His name? Ronald Reagan." Yeah, I know. All right, this is from Laura. "Mike, I know that you're upset with Democrats, but please, you are a smart guy, too smart for your own good. I'm a mother of three boys. I work 5 days a week, and so does my husband, who just got laid off unexpectedly. It's been a month, and unemployment is dragging their feet. So we are just surviving on one income, which, as you know, isn't sufficient under the Bush-Cheney war machine. We are hurting. My husband's selling his car so he can make our mortgage payments and buy school supplies and clothes for our kids, not to mention food. I have no food in the refrigerator. Luckily, my boys have football practice, and food has been provided for them because they are there for 6 hours a day. We have a nice house. A month ago, we made just under $100,000 a year. I know that you truly care about the little guys. So unlike the Republican mantra of welfare queens, we are hardworking Americans. We are the true patriots. We're the fiber of America. We are our brother's keeper. All of our kids do well in school and in sports. Two of them are applying for military academies. I need Obama to be the commander-in-chief. No more false wars. Kennedy said, a war worthy of their bravery. Please get on board, Mike. Endorse Obama for me, for you, and for our children. I understand. I hear you. I would rather seriously take my four-year-old and try to convince my adult children to take their children and leave this country if John McCain were ever to be president of the United States, because I know how close we are. He is truly a madman. I have no doubt. Bush was Bush. Bush was just a jerk. But John McCain would throw it all on the fire. He will. He definitely will. So, he needs the cooperation, of course, if the House and the Senate exercise their lawful constitutional power, he needs their permission to light the match. See, that's what everybody forgets, because I can hear people now, well, Mike, what you just said, then why in the hell are you telling us to vote for McCain? I'm not telling you to vote for anybody. I said that was a strategy to sink forever, to kill, to suffocate the Republican Party. But I could be wrong.
A land that's clean and free for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause
talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. So I look at Biden, I look at the Democratic Party, and I think about what the past 8 years have been. But there are certain things that we can't get away from. We try our damnedest. Television, absolutely, positively, body slams us into the memory hole. We're not supposed to remember this stuff. For example, this, it's difficult to overestimate the critical role Joe Biden played, in making the tragedy of the Iraq War possible. More than 2 months prior to the 2002 war resolution that October, even being introduced in what was widely interpreted as the first sign that Congress would endorse the U.S. invasion of Iraq, Biden declared on August 4th that the United States was probably going to war. In his powerful position at the time as chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he orchestrated a propaganda show designed to sell the war to skeptical colleagues and the American public by ensuring that dissenting voices would not get a fair hearing in front of his committee. As Scott Ritter, the former chief UN weapons inspector, noted at the time, quote, for Senator Biden's Iraq hearings to be anything more than a political sham used to invoke a modern-day Gulf of Tonkin resolution, equivalent for Iraq, his committee will need to ask hard questions and demand hard facts concerning the real nature of the weapons threat posed by Iraq, end quote. Now, it soon became apparent that Biden had no intention of doing so. Biden refused even to allow Ritter himself, who knew more about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction capabilities than anyone, and would have testified that Iraq had achieved at least qualitative disarmament, Biden would not allow Ritter to testify. Now, ironically, on Meet the Press just last year, 2007, Biden defended those false claims, his false claims about Iraqi weapons, by insisting, quote, everyone in the world thought he had them. The weapons inspector said he had them, which is a lie. Now, there's a website you can go to and get what I'm going to share with you, tinyrevolution.com, tinyrevolution.com. Joe Biden, in 2007, went on Meet the Press with Tim Russert to announce his 2008 run for president. That's where he announced. Russert. I want to go back to 2002 because it's important as to what people were saying then and what the American people were hearing. Here's Joe Biden, this is you, talking about Saddam Hussein. Quote, he's a long-term threat and a short-term threat to our national security. We have no choice but to eliminate the threat. This is a guy who is an extreme danger to the world, end quote. You also said, quote, he must be dislodged from his weapons or dislodged from power, end quote. You were emphatic about that, Senator Biden. That's right. And I was correct about that. He must be, in fact, and remember the weapons we were talking about. I also said on your show, that's part of what I said, but not all of what I meant. What I also said on your show at the time was that I did not think he had weaponized his material, but he did have. When the inspectors left after Saddam kicked them out, there was a cataloging at the United Nations saying he had X tons of so-and-so, X amount of so-and-so, and they listed the various materials he had. The big issue, remember, this is Biden talking, the big issue, remember, on this show we talked about was whether he had weaponized them. Remember, you asked me about those flights that were taking place in southern Iraq, where were they spraying anthrax? And you know what would happen. And you know, and so on and so forth. And I pointed out to you that they had not developed that capacity at all. But he did have those stockpiles everywhere. Okay. How do you keep track of the lies? Biden said when the inspectors left after Saddam kicked them out. Saddam Hussein never kicked out the UN weapons inspectors. They were withdrawn at the direct demand of the United States so that we could bomb Iraq in what was called Operation Desert Fox. All right, that's one. He also said there was a cataloging of the United Nations saying he had X tons of this and X amount of that, and they listed the various materials he had. He did have these stockpiles everywhere. That's what Biden said. Truth, the UN never said Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction. Biden's talking about documents prepared by the UN without or about the theoretical maximum amount of biological and chemical weapons Iraq could have produced before the first Gulf War in 1991, 12 years before Bush's adventure. He says everybody in the world thought he had weapons. The weapons inspector said he had them. Everyone in the world did not think that, even if you grant the scope of the metaphor. That's the same way as saying everyone in the world thought Joe Biden should run for president. For instance, the head of the CIA's Weapons of Mass Destruction section probably believed that Iraq had, quote, not much, if anything, end quote. It just goes on and on. Back to the interview, Biden said he did have all these stockpiles everywhere. Russert, where are they? Biden. Well, the point is, it turned out they didn't, but everyone in the world thought he had them. The weapons inspector said he had them. Not true. He cataloged, they cataloged them. Not true. This was not some Cheney, you know, pipe dream. This was, in fact, cataloged. Not true. They looked at them and cataloged. Not true. What did he do with them? Who knows? The real mystery is, if he didn't have any of them left, why didn't he say so? He did. Repeatedly. Well, a lot of people say if he had said that, he would have, you know, emboldened Iran and so on and so forth. Now, the rules of the road either mean something or they don't. The international community says we're going to enforce the sanctions we placed or not. So I did not believe he had weaponized his materials, but he did have material that, in fact, could theoretically be weaponized. And to let it sit there at the time, I wanted the inspectors back in to force him into that position of having to give it up. Oh, my God. Where do you begin with this? The CIA report, which is available to anyone with an internet connection, came out 3 years before Biden said all this on television. The U.S. government spent $1 billion on this 1,000-page CIA report, and Biden says if he didn't have any of them left, why didn't he say so? Iraq screamed at the top of his lungs for 12 years that it didn't have anything left. Iraqi officials said it on American TV over and over again throughout the 90s in a mini report submitted to the UN. They said it again in the 10,000-page report Iraq submitted in December 2002 to the UN. Saddam Hussein said Iraq had nothing in an interview on 60 Minutes in February 2003, and then again in Arabic on Iraqi national TV. And then Biden says, now the rules of the road either mean something or they don't. The international community says we're going to enforce the sanctions we placed or not. Well, the core of the Iraq weapons of mass destruction issue was that the U.S. had announced over and over and over again that the so-called rules of the road didn't mean anything. According to the relevant UN resolutions, the sanctions imposed before the Gulf War of 1991 would remain in place until Iraq had disarmed. However, the George Herbert Walker Bush administration immediately announced the U.S. would never allow the sanctions to be lifted as long as Saddam was in power. And the Clinton administration said the same thing. And then Biden said in the interview, but he did have material that, in fact, could theoretically be weaponized. He did not have the material that, in fact, could theoretically be weaponized. Now, two things. It's an either-or. Either Barack Obama or the people who did the search, which includes one of the Kennedy children, either Barack Obama knows all this or he doesn't. If he doesn't know about this, then his administration is going to be one where he has as much control over things as George W. Bush does now. Because how do you not know this sort of information about your running mate? It's on this silly little talk show. It was on Meet the Press. It's out there for anyone who wants to get it. Anyone. Anyone. You don't need a security clearance. So either Barack Obama doesn't know about this, in which case he truly is not qualified to be president of the United States, or he knows about it and it doesn't mean anything, in which case he is not qualified to be president of the United States. Now, I understand the emails I get from people who are, come on, Mike, get on board. Come on, Mike, do you want a McCain presidency? No, I don't. I really, really don't. But I'm telling you, beware, be forewarned. I think a lot of people in this country, like me, who are desperate, just desperate for leadership, desperate for this country to pull out of what we are in, I think we're going to be, once again, body slammed. We're going to have our heads rammed into a stone wall again. And what are we going to do next time?
Will we ever learn how many Iraqis per gallon on this endless killing spree? How many kids can you kill? Send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, we will be carrying as much of Barack Obama's speech as we can cram into our program. I guess the point I've been trying to make during this first segment of the program tonight is the contradictions that certainly fly around in my head. Now, a lot of people are much more clear in their thinking than I am about this. And I certainly can see that. I'm a very confused person. Here's an email. Mike, you got to make it as clear as the smog choking our children that in today's world the president is merely a figurehead, the same as the Queen of England is simply the voiceless bobblehead she is. Until people understand that the bankers, industrialists, and corporate goons of our money plutocracy are the combined shareholders of America, we're simply voting between Exxon and Walmart. I, for one, cannot comprehend how dense, stupid, and utterly without depth the American people have become. It wouldn't matter if Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse were elected president. We are not living in a democracy. How much more suffering, war, environmental degradation, and social chaos must we endure before people understand that they, the people, not the corporations, are the government? This requires a combined realization that in order to reestablish government of the people, by the people, and for the people must general strike before they strike us in total and in full war upon us. When Kucinich screamed for Americans to wake up, as he did just the other night, what did these people think he meant? He meant, do not continue to dream of a better world, but wake up and make a better world. But we the people, slaves and slavers that we are, want the sleeping pill, want the Ambien, want the Prozac, want the Viagra, anything but the reality of our own lives. Damn this insidious somnambulism. Damn this mass hypnosis. Damn this cowardly disregard for every document of liberty, every sacrifice ever made to make us free. It's the greed. Vote for Obama because they have kids they don't want to lose to war. That Obama says he'll bring to an end in 16 months. Why not yesterday? Vote for Obama because they want the McMansions. They want their Liberty Jeeps. They want their cheap and nasty DVD players made in China with slaves. Americans simply want to be their own little mini masters of their own private plantations. We've done this to ourselves, and there's no solution other than the honesty of our political and economic structure that demands slavery, demands war, demands poverty, to make our itty-bitty dollars worth more than the dirt it is. In God we trust, give me a break. The damn fools, this is a democracy, not a theocracy. It's in each other we trust, or we all choke on our own greed, deception, and delusion. Get off your damn knees, America. Quit enslaving others, America. Quit killing the world, America. And stand up on your own damn two legs and scream, no more war. Go to your churches and demand a concerted effort to stop the killing of others, the killing of ourselves, the killing of the past, the killing of the future. But no, everybody wants heaven by being obedient little slaves themselves anywhere else but here. Why? Because Americans hate the other, fear the other, and themselves, Tom. Now I have a handful of listeners who email me on a regular basis who clearly take that position, clearly, and that Tom just wrote about. And I drift towards that, as you know, if you're a regular listener to this program, quite a bit. And even today, while I'm being sucked into the vortex of emotion, you know, I take a look at the stage that's been prepared for Barack Obama, and I just about mess my own pants. What is this? I mean, what is this set against which Barack Obama is going to make I'm sure it's just going to be a driller of a speech. It's going to drill right into your brain, right into our hearts. It really is going to. You know it is. But I look at the phony columns back there and this theater in the round thing and 90,000 people, and I think, you know, maybe it is me that has lost touch with political truth. How can I and a few people be right, and this is a weird example, and 90,000 people crammed into Mile High Stadium be wrong? That can't be. One of the things that I've learned over the course of my life is that in so many instances, not all, but in so many instances, the way the herd thinks is not necessarily the wrong way. I guess. I don't know. Hell, I don't even know that anymore. This political season has just absolutely ripped me to pieces. How about you? Has it done the same to you? I feel like somebody who's shooting the rapids, like in the Chattooga River up here in the North Georgia Mountains, and all of a sudden, phew, there goes my canoe. And what I've got now is a life preserver around my neck, and I'm just being beat to death on the rocks, and the white water, and it's just, you know, oh my God. And all I can think about is, I'm going to drown. No, I got to grab that branch. Whoops, missed it. I'm going to drown. No, let me grab hold of these rocks. Woo, here I go in a whirlpool. I mean, it's just absolutely mind eating. You feel that same way? Some of you don't. Some of you are very clear. The Hillary supporters were very clear. The Obamacons are very clear. The people who see the sham are very clear. The people who understand that America is no longer what America had hoped at one time in the minds of a few framers to be are very clear. But me, you, maybe, I'm lost, man. I am wandering around here looking for something to hold on to. And it does get emotional. It gets real emotional. And then I hear one of these emotional speeches, a speech designed to just get inside me and devour whatever doubt I may have about Barack Obama. And it's pretty scary. It's pretty scary. I don't know. All right, listen there. Hopefully this guy introducing Barack Obama, Dick Durbin, will take a few minutes. We'll come back and put him on. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NovM Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. At the convention right now, they're playing the Obama biography video, and we're not going to take the audio from that. We're just going to wait until he begins speaking, and we'll take some of it. I don't know how much. I think it is important that we cover some of what he has to say, because this is the person who's going to be the next president of the United States. You know it as well as I do. By the way, it appears that McCain has picked Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty to be his running mate. Another thing that just broke, at least we just got word of it, a federal judge has sentenced former liberal talk show host Bernie Ward to a prison term of 7 years and 3 months in San Francisco. He had a 15-year career out there as the leading liberal voice on Bay Area talk radio. It all came apart when he admitted downloading graphic images of child sex and distributing them on the Internet. The judge who sentenced him said the federal minimum requirement is 5 years. The prosecution asked for 9, and the judge picked the middle. He will serve his sentence at Lompoc, a prison, which I understand is a minimum security prison. In the Bay, is it in the Bay Area? I think it's in the Bay Area. I'm sorry, I should know all this stuff, shouldn't I? Yeah, Lompoc. It's in Santa Barbara County. The prosecutors didn't object to that. It's a minimum security prison. The judge has given Bernie Ward until noon tomorrow to turn himself into federal marshals. Bernie Ward holds a master's degree in theology, spent 2 years in the priesthood before leaving to get married. He also worked for 3 years as a legislative assistant for then Representative Barbara Boxer. He joined KGO in San Francisco as a reporter in 1985, and he became a talk show host in 1992. He also had a program every Sunday called God Talk. Anyway, he pled guilty in May to distributing child pornography and admitted sending between 15 and 150 pornographic images by email, which he said were part of research for a book. His sentencing today was attended by his wife and 4 children. He spoke briefly, saying to the judge, quote, "I regret my actions, the harm they caused my family, my friends, and this community." and he took full responsibility for his conduct. Bernie Ward, the so-called Lion of the Left, 7+ years in prison on child pornography charges. Oh, and when he gets out, he'll have to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. Wow. I want to play something for you real quick. Tom Brokaw on MSNBC, yesterday, the day before, talking to Chris Matthews, it's during the convention, and Brokaw was trying to make the point that Bill Clinton should not or cannot criticize John McCain because, well, you know, Clinton dodged the draft while McCain was in a POW camp. Makes you wonder how many shots Brokaw took at Vietnam vet John Kerry. Huh? You know, you got to wonder if this POW camp crap stuff will ever stop. I'm really sick of this. Does this magically make somebody a great political leader because they did time in a POW camp, shot down because they were murdering civilians? And why would McCain call the Supreme Court a decision to give Guantanamo detainees rights to fair trials one of the worst decisions in history? I wonder if he would have liked to have had a fair trial when he was being held in a North Vietnamese prison. Anyway, listen, if you ever wonder about the about the bias of the media, listen to the dean of NBC News, Tom Brokaw.
Tom, first, what did you make of the acknowledgement of the service of John McCain in very glowing terms?
Well, look, for Bill Clinton and for anyone in the Democratic Party for that matter, it's a very tricky case taking on John McCain and trying to rough him up. When John McCain was sitting in a prison in Hanoi, Bill Clinton was writing letters to his ROTC commander and trying to get out of the draft, which he did successfully.
Is Brokaw just giving a statement of fact? Because nothing that he said in that statement is incorrect. I guess you have to read into it a little bit. Of course, Clinton was, but Clinton was told. I'm not going to make a case for Clinton. I think it's great that any man managed to evade the draft during the Vietnam horror. But Clinton, after he tried to avoid the draft, finally gave up. And his name was submitted to the lottery. He just happened to get a high number. But you would think maybe Brokaw, at some point in Brokaw's long, illustrious career, especially now, that he could mention the current commander-in-chief and the murderous son of a bitch that sits in the vice president's slot between the two of them, how they evaded the draft, especially Cheney. And why stop there? Why not go through the entire Republican Party leadership with the exception of what, Chuck Hagel? So, you know, Tom Brokaw, who should have known better, I think. All right. Is the movie over? No? Well, bring up the sound. Let's see what we got here. All right, let's hang out for a while. Here we go. Holy God, it looks like opening night at the Olympics in Beijing. Look at that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Come on.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. To Chairman Dean and my great friend, Dick Durbin, and to all my fellow citizens of this great nation, with profound gratitude and great humility, I accept your nomination for presidency of the United States. Let me express my thanks to the historic slate of candidates who accompanied me on this journey, and especially the one who traveled the farthest, a champion for working Americans and an inspiration to my daughters and yours, Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Is that never going to stop?
To President Clinton, to President Bill Clinton, who made last night the case for change as only he can make it. To Ted Kennedy, who embodies the spirit of service. And to the next Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, I thank you. I am grateful to finish this journey with one of the finest statesmen of our time, a man at ease with everyone from world leaders to the conductors on the Amtrak train he still takes home every night. To the love of my life, our next First Lady, Michelle Obama. And to Malia and Sasha, I love you so much and I am so proud of you. Years ago, I stood before you and told you my story of the brief union between a young man from Kenya and a young woman from Kansas who weren't well off or well known, but shared a belief that in America, their son could achieve whatever he put his mind to. It is that promise that's always set this country apart, that through hard work and sacrifice, each of us can pursue our individual dreams, but still come together as one American family to ensure that the next generation can pursue their dreams as well. That's why I stand here tonight. Because for 232 years, at each moment when that promise was in jeopardy, ordinary men and women, students and soldiers, farmers and teachers, nurses and janitors, found the courage to keep it alive. We meet at one of those defining moments, a moment when our nation is at war, our economy is in turmoil, and the American promise has been threatened once more. Tonight, more Americans are out of work, and more are working harder for less. More of you have lost your homes, and even more are watching your home values plummet.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. And, yeah, we're going to continue some of the speech. So stick around if you like. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I've been drinking gin like never before. I feel so good that I want you to.
Mike Malloy.
24 past the hour. Well, the lullaby is being provided by the Democratic nominee to be president. Until he stops speaking, we're going to bring as much of it as we can. Let's go back.
Tell that to the military families who shoulder their burdens silently as they watch their loved ones leave for their third or fourth or fifth tour of duty. These are not whiners. They work hard and they give back. And they keep going without complaint. These are the Americans I know. Now, I don't believe that Senator McCain doesn't care what's going on in the lives of Americans. I just think he doesn't know. Why else would he define middle class as someone making under $5 million a year? How else could he propose hundreds of billions in tax breaks for big corporations and oil companies, but not one penny of tax relief to more than 100 million Americans? How else could he offer a health care plan that would actually tax people's benefits? Or an education plan that would do nothing to help families pay for college, or a plan that would privatize Social Security and gamble your retirement? It's not because John McCain doesn't care. It's because John McCain doesn't get it. For over two decades, he subscribed to that old discredited Republican philosophy. Give more and more to those with the most, and hope that prosperity trickles down to everyone else. In Washington, they call this the ownership society. But what it really means is that you're on your own. Out of work? Tough luck. You're on your own. No health care? The market will fix it. You're on your own. Born into poverty? Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Even if you don't have boots, you are on your own. Well, it's time for them to own their failure. It's time for us to change America. And that's why I'm running for president of the United States.
We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
You see, we Democrats have a very different measure of what constitutes progress in this country. We measure progress by how many people can find a job that pays the mortgage. Whether you can put a little extra money away at the end of each month so you can someday watch your child receive her college diploma. We measure progress in the 23 million new jobs that were created when Bill Clinton was
be my man.
And now the man conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
A hole in the air from those Nazis in Tiananmen Square.
Welcome back. 25 before the hour. Let's go back to Mile High Stadium and Barack Obama's acceptance speech.
And today we import triple the amount of oil
than we had on the day that Senator McCain took office. Now is the time to end this addiction and to understand that drilling is a stopgap measure, not a long-term solution, not even close. As president, I will tap our natural gas reserves, invest in clean coal technology, and find ways to safely harness nuclear power. I'll help our auto companies retool so that the fuel-efficient cars of the future are built right here in America. I'll make it easier for the American people to afford these new cars. And I'll invest $150 billion over the next decade in affordable, renewable sources of energy, wind power and solar power, and the next generation of biofuels, an investment that will lead to new industries and 5 million new jobs that pay well and can't be outsourced. America, now is not the time for small plans. Now is the time to finally meet our moral obligation to provide every child a world-class education, because it will take nothing less to compete in the global economy. You know, Michelle and I are only here tonight because we were given a chance at an education. And I will not settle for an America where some kids don't have that chance. Invest in early childhood education. I'll recruit an army of new teachers and pay them higher salaries and give them more support. And in exchange, I'll ask for higher standards and more accountability. And we will keep our promise to every young American. If you commit to serving your community or our country, we will make sure you can afford a college education. Now is the time to finally keep the promise of affordable, accessible health care for every single American. If you have health care, my plan will lower your premiums. If you don't, you'll be able to get the same kind of coverage that members of Congress give themselves. And as someone who watched my mother argue with insurance companies while she lay in bed dying of cancer, I will make certain those companies stop discriminating against those who are sick and need care the most. Now is the time to help families with paid sick days and better family leave, because nobody in America should have to choose between keeping their job and caring for a sick child or an ailing parent. Now is the time to change our bankruptcy laws so that your pensions are protected ahead of CEO bonuses, and the time to protect Social Security for future generations. And now is the time to keep the promise of equal pay for an equal day's work, because I want my daughters to have the exact same opportunities as your sons. Now, many of these plans will cost money, which is why I've laid out how I'll pay for every dime by closing corporate loopholes and tax havens that don't help America grow. But I will also go through the federal budget line by line, eliminating programs that no longer work and making the ones we do need work better and cost less, because we cannot meet 21st century challenges with a 20th century bureaucracy. And Democrats, we must also admit that fulfilling America's promise will require more than just money. It will require a renewed sense of responsibility from each of us to recover what John F. Kennedy called our intellectual and moral strength. Yes, government must lead on energy independence, but each of us must do our part to make our homes and businesses more efficient. Yes, we must provide more ladders to success for young men who fall into lives of crime and despair. But we must also admit that programs alone can't replace parents, that government can't turn off the television and make a child do her homework, that fathers must take more responsibility to provide love and guidance to their children. Individual responsibility and mutual responsibility. That's the essence of America's promise. And just as we keep our promise to the next generation here at home, so must we keep America's promise abroad. If John McCain wants to have a debate about who has the temperament and judgment to serve as the next commander-in-chief, that's a debate I'm ready to have. While Senator McCain was turning his sights to Iraq just days after 9/11, I stood up and opposed this war, knowing that it would distract us from the real threats that we face. When John McCain said we could just muddle through in Afghanistan, I argued for more resources and more troops to finish the fight against the terrorists who actually attacked us on 9/11, and made clear that we must take out Osama bin Laden and his lieutenants if we have them in our sights. You know, John McCain likes to say that he'll follow bin Laden to the gates of hell, but he won't even follow him to the cave where he lives. Today is my call for a time frame to remove our troops from Iraq has been echoed by the Iraqi government and even the Bush administration, even after we learned that Iraq has $79 billion in surplus while we are wallowing in deficit. John McCain stands alone in his stubborn refusal to end a misguided war. That's not the judgment we need. That won't keep America safe. We need a president who can face the threats of the future, not keep grasping at the ideas of the past. You don't defeat a terrorist network that operates in 80 countries by occupying Iraq. You don't protect Israel and deter Iran just by talking tough in Washington. You can't truly stand up for Georgia when you've strained our oldest alliances. If John McCain wants to follow George Bush with more tough talk and bad strategy, that is his choice, but that is not the change that America needs. We are the party of Roosevelt. We are the party of Kennedy. So don't tell me that Democrats won't defend this country. Don't tell me that Democrats won't keep us safe. The Bush-McCain foreign policy has squandered the legacy that generations of Americans, Democrats and Republicans, have built. And we are here to restore that legacy. As Commander-in-Chief, I will never hesitate to defend this nation. But I will only send our troops into harm's way with a clear mission and a sacred commitment to give them the equipment they need in battle and the care and benefits they deserve when they come home. I will end this war in Iraq responsibly and finish the fight against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan. I will rebuild our military to meet future conflicts, but I will also renew the top direct deployment to prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons.
Liberal helping of truth, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Let's go back to Mile High Stadium and listen to more of Barack Obama's acceptance speech.
And that's to be expected. Because if you don't have any fresh ideas, then you use stale tactics to scare voters. If you don't have a record to run on, then you paint your opponent as someone people should run from. You make a big election about small things. And you know what? It's worked before. Because it feeds into the cynicism we all have about government. When Washington doesn't work, all its promises seem empty. If your hopes have been dashed again and again, then it's best to stop hoping and settle for what you already know. I get it. I realize that I'm not the likeliest candidate for this office. I don't fit the typical pedigree, and I haven't spent my career in the halls of Washington. But I stand before you tonight because all across America, something is stirring. What the naysayers don't understand is that this election has never been about me. It's about you. It's about you. For 18 long months, you have stood up one by one and said enough to the politics of the past. You understand that in this election, the greatest risk we can take is to try the same old politics with the same old players and expect a different result. You have shown what history teaches us, that at defining moments like this one, the change we need doesn't come from Washington. Change comes to Washington. Change happens because the American people demand it. Because they rise up and insist on new ideas and new leadership, a new politics for a new time. America, this is one of those moments. I believe that as hard as it will be, the change we need is coming. Because I've seen it. Because I've lived it. Because I've seen it in Illinois when we provided health care to more children and moved more families from welfare to work. I've seen it in Washington where we worked across party lines to open up government and hold lobbyists more accountable, to give better care for our veterans and keep nuclear weapons out of the hands of terrorists. And I've seen it in this campaign. In the young people who voted for the first time, and the young at heart, those who got involved again after a very long time, in the Republicans who never thought they'd pick up a Democratic ballot, but did. I've seen it in the workers who would rather cut their hours back a day, even though they can't afford it, than see their friends lose their jobs. In the soldiers who re-enlist after losing a limb.
in the good neighbors who take a stranger in when a hurricane strikes and the floodwaters rise. You know, this country of ours has more wealth than any nation, but that's not what makes us rich. We have the most powerful military on earth, but that's not what makes us strong. Our universities and our culture are the envy of the world, but that's not what keeps the world coming to our shores. Instead, it is that American spirit, that American promise, that pushes us forward, even when the path is uncertain, that binds us together in spite of our differences, that makes us fix our eye not on what is seen, but what is unseen, that better place around the bend. That promise is our greatest inheritance. It's a promise I make to my daughters when I tuck them in at night, and a promise that you make to yours. A promise that has led immigrants to cross oceans and pioneers to travel west. A promise that led workers to picket lines and women to reach for the ballot. And it is that promise that 45 years ago today brought Americans from every corner of this land to stand together on a mall in Washington before Lincoln's memorial and hear a young preacher from Georgia speak of his dream. The men and women who gathered there could have heard many things. They could have heard words of anger and discord. They could have been told to succumb to the fear and frustrations of so many dreams deferred. But what the people heard instead, people of every creed and color, from every walk of life, is that in America, our destiny is inextricably linked. That together, our dreams can be won. We cannot walk alone, the preacher cried. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. America, we cannot turn back. Not with so much work to be done. Not with so many children to educate and so many veterans to care for. Not with an economy to fix and cities to rebuild and farms to save. Not with so many families to protect and so many lives to mend. America, we cannot turn back. We cannot walk alone. At this moment, in this election, we must pledge once more to march into the future. Let us keep that promise, that American promise, and in the words of Scripture, hold firmly, without wavering, to the hope that we confess. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
We shall return after the break at the top of the hour here with your phone calls. If you have a comment on what you heard, 800-989-1480. Let's hear it, folks. All right, welcome back. The Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. So what did you think? Do you want to assess the speech? I'm sure the political experts on all the networks are assessing it and parsing it and trying to decide if it was good, bad, or indifferent. The number here is 800-989-1480. So now's the time to jump in. Let's start with Marie, who's calling from Lee Summit, Missouri, listening on the Internet. Hey, Marie.
Hi, Mike. I love your show, and I try to listen every moment I can get, but I have to balance between listening to what you say and whatever these speeches have been on. But anyhow, I totally sympathize with you and agree with many of the things you've said about how, you know, watching how Obama votes, you know, and that really just kind of it's aggravated me as just much as it's aggravated you, and trying to find out, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to stay home or vote, you know? And I don't know. And I've looked at his voting records. You've encouraged it among your many listeners. And but, man, his rhetoric is good.
yeah, it is. And not to take anything away from the sincerity of what Barack Obama is saying, I have to acknowledge that he knows how to hit the buttons. Certainly inside of me, I think inside of most Americans, we're not, and I don't think Barack Obama thinks this, we're not brain dead out here, and we're also not emotionless. And we all know what we've been through for the past 8 years. We know how this has been building up. We have an understanding of the absolute mortal danger this society, our country is in right now because of the Bush administration. And, to have someone, at least to some degree, although he didn't articulate it to the degree I would have liked, but have somebody articulate that knowledge. Yeah, we're in trouble. Enough.
Right. Yeah, I liked what he said there. The one thing I did like was, and I think that's where I was like, wow, he is great. I mean, I started getting a tear in my eye. I was like, gosh, I really didn't think I could get that moved just by watching it, because I've become cynical, you know.
I know.
But
I know. Me too.
He said, our military is not what makes us strong. Our education isn't, you know, what, you know, it marvels that of other parts of the world, but that's not what brings people from across the ocean over here. It is the American spirit. And that just it spoke oodles to me, because I'm thinking about how he said how we opened our houses for people from, you know, who've been destroyed by hurricanes, and obviously he was talking about Katrina, you know, but
right.
it's that what he was actually just tugging at my heart, and I'm just thinking, wow, you know, it reminds me of how the Bush administration, the far right, wants everybody to just be an individualist, and, you know, it's all about individual success. You don't help anybody else. You don't help your neighbor. But that's what he's trying to inspire again. And that's it's kind of like the dream. I know he's talking about Martin Luther King and the dream, and I just feel it. I could feel it. And I'm thinking, you know, regardless of how he votes, and I don't agree with it, I'm like, God, don't go there, you know. But I'm like, I just think, well, at least I could probably vote just because of the spirit he can actually try and bring out in each and every one of us, you know?
Right. Well, I think a lot of people are going to vote for that for him for that reason, Marie. I really do. Hey, thanks. I appreciate your insight. Thanks a lot. Email here from Sam in West Virginia, who writes, Mike, was there any mention in candidate Obama's acceptance speech about the restoration of our civil rights and liberties and the restoration of the balance of powers taken away by the Patriot Acts and the several executive orders, national security directives? Was there any mention in the speech about Senator McCain's flip-flops on torture? And as a part of the change, will we abide by the Geneva Conventions? If these things were in his speech, Sam writes, I didn't hear them. Yeah, well, I'm getting emails now from folks who apparently are not as easily taken in as I am, because, like I say, I just get, you know, I get right up to right up to the edge of this. And, you know, I just want to jump in. I just want to say, yeah, salvation. You know, what's the old Moody Blues song? Communication. Oh, what is that one, Kathy? We'll find it during the break. But it is difficult not to get, for me anyway, to get swept into what Barack Obama is saying. You know, to see this man standing there saying the things I want to hear, except, I mean, when he got specific, then I started to think, oh, Jesus, no. As long as he kept it in platitudes, and I don't mean that in a sarcastic way, but as long as he kept it in the kind of rhetorical, the flowery, platitudinous speech, you know, I'm willing to go right along. But he's talking one second about the dream and about power, and we've had enough, and then he mentions safe nuclear technology or clean coal, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, wasn't Al Gore on right, you know, tonight? Doesn't Al Gore need to sit this guy down and say, no, there is no such thing as safe nuclear technology by definition, or nuclear power by definition? If we want to have nuclear power plants, okay, but it will never be, because it cannot be made safe, because it produces waste material that is deadly and lethal for hundreds of thousands of what, centuries? So when someone, I don't care if it's a right winger, a left winger, I don't care who it is, who starts talking about safe nuclear technology, I'm sorry, you're blowing smoke. And it gets even worse when they start talking about clean coal. How do you do that? Now, the more technologically advanced out there are going to say, well, Mike, first of all, you don't know what you're talking about because you don't understand the technology. Technology is constantly improving. That's going to come. Okay, you tell me how to get rid of plutonium, how to get rid of the byproducts of nuclear energy, and, man, I'm right there. But as far as I know, so far, can't be done. I don't think. I don't know. I'm not that bright. But rather than talk about nuclear power, why not talk about fusion power? Why not talk about really focus on solar power? And instead of what all these politicians do now, because it is all of a sudden it's very popular, mention wind power and solar power and geothermal power and so on and so forth, but only in passing. I don't know. I'm sitting here struggling. But so let's go back to your phone calls. RB is calling from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, listening on Sirius. RB, welcome to the program.
Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm actually phoning about 50 kilometers away from Edmonton, Alberta. I'm on the road tonight in the semi.
Oh, okay. Well, you're here anyway.
Yeah, I was listening to XM. I listened to a whole hour to this speech, and there were times where, like you almost want to fall into it, but then you realize who his advisors are and what they've been saying. And when he picked Joe Biden, I went, okay, well, if he was really a guy about change, why didn't he pick Dennis Kucinich and really challenge him and start talking about the power of the military-industrial complex?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. It's just, I couldn't go along. And then afterwards, if the cannon's going off and the column's exploding, you know, what's with twin columns exploding? What is that trying to say? And the fireworks and the adulation, and it was like the Roman theater of old, you know, how the Caesars got the people to forget about their, you know.
Hey, RB, hold on a second. I'll come back to you, but I got to take a break here. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We're talking about the acceptance speech by Barack Obama tonight. We're talking with RB in on the road in Canada. All right, RB, go ahead. Wrap it up for me.
Wrapping up, I just wanted to say I heard Tom Hartman interview one of his foreign policy advisors, the other Condi, Susan Rice, the left-wing one, Brookings Institute, all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hartman started talking about, Karl Rove being over, talking to Saakashvili, and McCain's advisor being on the payroll of the Georgian president there, and, how the invasion, all that sort of angle, and she was, totally turn the subject around to Russian aggression and how Barack Obama is going to be strong and firm, and then on to about Afghanistan and Osama bin Laden and all that stuff. We know where he's, with Leonid Brzezinski, one of his advisors, the guy who wrote the Grand Chessboard, we know what's going to happen. He might pull the troops out of Iraq, and that's great, but, there's going to just be more investment made into the failed war in Afghanistan that they're going to, the Soviets didn't, went through that, and now they're probably going to have the upper hand on both those, because we've got Canadian soldiers there. 50 of them have died there.
Mm-hmm.
War about protecting a pipeline. This has nothing to do with democracy. It's ridiculous. I can't understand, why people like Tom Hartman, who know the score, can sit there and do an interview like that and afterwards fawn over the person who just bullcrapped them, and say, oh, thank you for the interview, and I love the job you're doing, and let's get a Democrat in there, and I don't know. What do you, that's my feeling anyway. I just, always tugging at the back of me when I'm trying to, believe in this hope thing. But remember, we went through this with Clinton, the man from hope. I remember me playing the saxophone. Everybody was happy that finally, we're going to have some peace and justice in this world.
Well, I hear you, RB, and I understand. I'm stammering again. I understand what you say. I really do. And I've got no response. Thanks, RB. I appreciate you checking in. We have made it very clear on this program over and over and over again. That's why I've lost so many listeners, that the advisors to Hillary Clinton and the advisors to Barack Obama are the same. Have the same agenda as the advisors to John McCain, only not quite as violent and not quite as all at once. Equally violent, but not all at once. A lot of people waited to hear the speech by the first person of color who is going to be the next president of the United States. I've got a wait list, too. I'm waiting to hear the first candidate, the nominee, I should say, not candidate, because a lot of candidates have said this, but the first nominee who will stand there and talk about peace, no war, economic justice, criminal justice, social justice. People who, a nominee who will stand there and talk about single-payer health care, not universal health care. Universal health care, the people think that means something other than what it does. We already have universal car insurance in most states. So what? It doesn't mean anything. Single-payer health care, nationalization of transportation, nationalization of the energy industry, nationalization of the reclaiming of the military, industrial complex, so away from private enterprise. The government reclaim it and then destroy it. The dismantling and destruction to the extent that's possible of nuclear weapons. The detargeting of half the world that's going on right now, leading by example. I'm so goddamn sick of the paranoia. I'm so sick being told about a cave in Afghanistan. I could just puke blood. I am so sick of it. I don't give a damn about a cave in Afghanistan. I'll tell you what we should have done all those years ago, 7 years ago, is sent a crack international police team, Interpol, not the FBI. The FBI couldn't find its ass with both hands. All the FBI knows to do is to run into each other. But send some Interpol people and capture the people who organized this. And then bring them and the members of the Bush crime family who allowed it to happen and put all the sons of bitches on trial. But that's not what we did. And now Barack Obama wants a surge in Afghanistan. Cut the troops in Iraq, send more to Afghanistan. For what? There's nobody in Afghanistan. I know where Barack, Osama bin Laden is. He's in Pakistan, for Christ's sake. That's where he has been. And so what? What difference does it make? So here we go again. You know, here we go again. You know, when his wife and kids come out, I melt. I mean, I think about those two little girls. Can you imagine who their dad is? I mean, can you imagine? And they look like little angels. And there's their dad, and these kids are standing there. And 90,000 people are cheering their father. I mean, you can't not be moved by that. You know, if you can even to 1/1,000,000% get behind their eyes, those two little girls. And whew, man, that's overwhelming. That just knocks my knees right out from under me. But then I come out of the ether, you know, from that moment, and I think, oh, Christ, no. No, no.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
Before the hour, a couple of quick emails here, then back to your phone calls. This is from Ray in Arizona. Ray writes, Martin Luther King is weeping in heaven. Obama wants to defend and uphold the establishment that Dr. King challenged. This is from Roz. The American people are very trusting and get over emotional. When a people are desperate for change and looking for a savior, they end up getting a Hitler. Isn't that how he came into power? He made far too many unrealistic promises. The speech sounded like pie in the sky to me, Roz. Bill writes, Mike, I share your pain, but no matter how much you yell or kick them or try to reason with them, they are not going to wake up. It's the dream, Mike, the dream, the shining city on the hill. You step on a man's dreams at your peril. Obama, even my dear old 91-year-old dad is buying into his shtick. Maybe, just maybe, he'll see the power that he has. Obama will see the power that he has in his hands. Hell, just look at the reception he got tonight, and he will tell his shadowy masters, hell no, I'm the president. I am doing what's good for the people. Maybe. I don't think so. I just hope so. Otherwise, it's lights out for all of us. This is from Jordan in L.A. Mike, I heard some things that really worry me in a big way, and also the very huge extravaganza and media event this was. Seeing a full stadium filled with 90,000 people cheering at Obama and his family, standing in the middle with fireworks going off and blaring patriotic music flowing over everything. It is surreal. It feels so manufactured that it was frightening. Then a blizzard of flag-colored confetti. He said some things that really worried me, particularly about Russia and Georgia. We know Georgia attacked South Ossetia and killed 2,000 civilians. Then in retaliation, Russia invaded Georgia. We know the United States has been training the Georgian military and arming them, as well as operating special forces in that country. The U.S. and NATO are now massing warships in the Black Sea next to Russian warships and provoking the Russians by calling them the aggressor, as well as giving Georgia more military aid as well. It is being reported tonight by the Daily Mail in the U.K. Moscow has issued an extraordinary warning to the West that military assistance to Georgia for use against South Ossetia or Abkhazia would be viewed as, quote, a declaration of war, end quote, by Russia. And so tonight, Obama again made the statement that we must curb Russian aggression as well as stand up for Georgia. by proclaiming these statements about Russia and the false claim that they were the aggressor to millions across the country and the world on the night of his acceptance as the party nominee could easily be seen as a foreshadowing of what to expect when he is likely to be president. A new Cold War started by us. Jordan in L.A. Malachi in Saskatoon. All due respect to my fellow Saskatoonian, but he's slightly, about RB, he's slightly out of date. 93 Canadian soldiers have now been killed in Afghanistan, not 50. And Mark writes, Mike, you just said that bin Laden is in Pakistan rather than Afghanistan, but I distinctly remember the show when you played back an interview Benazir Bhutto gave in which she mentioned in passing the, quote, man who murdered Osama bin Laden, end quote. You do think bin Laden is dead, right? I do, a faithful listener, Martin. Yeah, I do. I guess what I'm saying is what do I know? I do think he's dead. I think he's probably been dead for a long time. I think he died of liver failure or kidney failure or whatever it was that was eating him from the inside out. But if he is not dead, then he would be in Pakistan, right? All right, back to your phone calls. A Spitfire is calling from Anaheim, California, listening on the Internet. Spitfire, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
Rocky.
I had a feeling. Okay, I posted something on your board.
Oh, okay.
It just says, Mike Malloy's right in being cynical. Let's face it, Republicans vote for leaders that they can follow. Since liberals by nature question authority, we tend to vote for a union steward, watch them like a hawk, to see if they're selling us out. So
well,
we've been sold out every time.
What are you going to be looking for? As I pointed on this program, a lot of listeners have pointed out, the sellout, and I'll use your term, starts before a nominee becomes president, and it begins when the advisors that he has collected around him start laying out the policies that he will try to put into play when he becomes president. Now, if that's the case, if that defines sellout, it's already begun, I should say. This email I just read about the Russian situation, I've got about five things here on Russia I wanted to get to tonight and won't. I'll have to do it tomorrow night. But we are probably closer to war with Russia right now.
Yeah, and it's stupid, too, because Georgia used to be part of Russia until after the Soviet Union fell. Then Russia's line was cut back,
right.
And all of those satellite communities, you know, all those satellite states, they cut back their border. But it's like those people that were in those two provinces are Russians.
Yeah.
They just had the border. They didn't cross the border. The border crossed them.
Well, that's
and,
true.
And Georgia wanted to annex those two parts. It was a campaign promise by the president,
right,
that he would annex those two parts. So this was an attempt by the president, who was voted under, you know, it was like one of those 51-49 elections, you know what I mean? Anyway, he promised the people in Georgia that he would annex those two sections and make them part of Georgia. But I guess in their minds, they thought they were going to do a little ethnic cleansing.
You know, well, the Spitfire, I'm going to have to move on, but I think first of all, Georgians, if I'm thinking of the right nation, or am I thinking of Ukraine, Georgians do not speak Russian. They had their own culture. They had their own religion. They had their own language. And unless I'm making a grievous error here that I'll have to come back after the break and apologize for. As far as being part of Russia, no, they were part of the Soviet Union. Stalin came from Georgia. So many prominent communists came from Georgia. But I don't believe that Georgia was ever part of Russia. It was a discrete individual country that was absorbed by the communists when the Soviet Union was put together. But what I was going to say, we are probably closer to a nuclear war with Russia right now than we were in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis, when the Russian Navy was steaming toward Cuba escorting, among other things, cargo ships that were carrying the components to complete the building of the missile launching sites in Cuba. And Kennedy said, no, it's not going to happen. And both countries were on hair trigger alert. And it's if we are not at that place right now, we are getting close to it. I will guarantee you that in the bowels of the military planning agencies in this country, not to mention the Soviet Union or the Russians, in the bowels of the military planning agencies, the missiles are already being targeted. If they weren't over the past 30 or 40 years. And the military-industrial complex loves this, because the next thing you're going to hear from a President Obama or a candidate Obama or a President McCain or candidate McCain is how out of date our nuclear arsenal is. I mean, Bush started saying that 5 years ago, got to build new nuclear weapons. I'm so sick of this. I didn't hear anything tonight in this emotional speech. Even with all the emotion, even with the wife and the children, even with the blending of black and white, which was a sight to see. I mean, it really was. In this racist country, that was a sight to see. It really was. And it overrode all my switches. Everything inside my head and heart that are saying, no, 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 hold back, Malloy, hold back. You know, they got overridden there for a few minutes. But then back to reality, and I think to myself, son of a bitch, the man is standing there more or less challenging the Russians, based on a false reporting of what happened. Who in this country, let me rephrase it. Who outside of this country doesn't really know what happened with this Georgian-Russian dust-up? Who doesn't know that the Russians didn't invade? God damn it! They didn't! They responded as we would. Put 2,000 dead Americans in Mexico because Nicaragua decides to invade Mexico and seize a couple of provinces that are really people who are of Nicaraguan descent, and all of a sudden you've got 2,000 dead Americans there. What the hell do you think the United States military would do at that point? It's insane. But here we have the man, Barack Obama, saying something either that he knows is not true or thinks we don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't. I will be so glad when this is over. The Democratic convention is over now. Barack is Obama is the nominee. Okay. And I said something the other night about, oh, yeah, well, I'll do this when the Republicans have their convention. No, I'm not. You know why? Because Ronald Reagan spared me the agony of having to do it when Ronald Reagan destroyed the Fairness Doctrine. So screw the Republicans. I'm going to report crap about them. We may talk about them and mock them and make fun of them, but I'm not going to do anything like this kind of coverage that we've done here with the Democrats. And the reason is obvious. People who want to hear about the Republican convention are never going to listen to this program anyway. And I don't want to insult you. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. God, I wish I smoked again. Every time I hear Leonard Cohen, I just want to, you know, light up a pack of cigarettes all at once. Have 20 of them burn at the same time.
Now you sound like Pickles.
And sit there and drink. You know, just drink myself into a nicotine alcohol stupor. Where'd that come from? Anyway, thanks to the crew tonight. The technical crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, and Catherine Bay, our executive producer, the less than technical crew, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf. Everybody, thank you very much for the program. I have to say, of course, this is not reflective of the world out there by any means, but I think the emails I'm getting tonight now are running about 15 to 1 against Barack Obama. Okay, here it is. The Caucasian language of the Republic of Georgia is spoken by about 4 million people worldwide. Georgian is unique among Caucasian languages in having an ancient literary tradition. Blah, 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 blah. The earliest attestation of the language is an inscription of in a church in Palestine. The civil script used to write modern Georgian with 33 characters and no distinction between upper and lower case. Blah, 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 blah. It's believed it was maybe an adaptation from Greek. Anyway, yeah, okay, thanks to Jack who wrote that in. I thought I had that right. I remember reading that in the past week or two, that the Georgian language is certainly not Russian. Back to your phone calls. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Hello there.
Hi. Hey.
Democrats know how to deliver a speech is what I think.
Yeah, well, that's you're right there.
Did you catch on early when he had about a half a dozen people that he ran into across the country when he was making his...
Yeah.
That one guy from Indiana I kind of liked, Barney Smith. Did you hear?
Well, that may have been when we were in a commercial break, Marge. I didn't catch the guy's name.
Well, he worked for... some kind of a tube company that closed up and moved overseas, and he lost his job.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And his cute little line was, he says, it's about time that those people in Washington pay attention to Barney Smith instead of Smith Barney.
Oh, that's cute.
The other line that I heard in the last couple of days on air, well, what that station is, that the Democrats are the only ones he knows that are afraid to be on their own side in a fight. And I said, yeah. And I went back to, remember the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
Sure.
There's a scene in there where, I don't know the guy's name, he's been in other movies, but he's twice the size of Paul Newman.
Right.
And he's starting to pick a fight with him.
Yeah.
And Newman says something about, before we start this fight, he says, we got to establish rules. And he says, rules in a knife fight? And Newman says, yeah, there'll be none of this. And he kicks him in the slats. And then none of something else. He says, now we need somebody to say 1, 2, 3, go. And by that time, they were on their bicycle running the hell out of town.
Right.
But I don't know. I just wish that those of us that want to get in this fight and make it work and make our country go back to the way it is would get up off our ass and not be afraid to take our own side in the fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. The problem is the people that control our political system now, Marge, are not interested in a fight.
And a bitch.
Yeah, it's awful. They're more interested in I don't know, something else, I guess, power or
money,
empire, money. Yeah. So.
Well, at least Dotson didn't get his prayers answered tonight. Is that what the guy's name?
I think it was focused on the family that was praying for rain.
Yeah, well, somebody was praying that it would rain in Denver tonight on all the goings on. You know, he may get his wish a little bit late, but by the this time next week, Gustav may be heading right smack dab for the city that
I know.
Old Brownie. Was a heck of a guy. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. I'm,
wouldn't that be a reminder for the Republicans next week?
It very well could be. As a matter of fact, the predictions are that come Monday when is that when the Republican convention starts on Monday? That's when the hurricane should come ashore. And if it comes ashore at New Orleans, oh, well. Thanks, Marge. Mary is calling from Memphis, listening on the internet. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Well, I had called up with a few comments on Obama's speech, and you've hit most of them.
Yeah.
And that was about Osama bin Laden, Bhutto had already said he was killed, and nuclear power when we should be concentrating on him.
Right. Yeah,
more
him.
More war, more stuff in Afghanistan, more war, more defense of Israel, more war, more helping of Georgia.
Yeah.
So do you mind if I just trash Biden for a little bit?
Go ahead. I've got, I hate to tell you this, but we have about 40 seconds.
Okay. In a nutshell, he ties our national economy well-being to corporatist arms sales.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's it in a nutshell. He wants to give $1 billion to Georgia, which just whacked its own citizens, according to Saakashvili.
Mm-hmm.
AIPAC gives him a 100% rating. And you are thinking, you already mentioned that he refused to let Scott Ritter talk at the Senate hearings before the Iraq resolution and so forth. As long as we have our national economy tied up in arms sales to second and third world countries, we're not going to have peace. And Biden and McCain,
I hear you,
both represent that.
I hear you. And, Mary, I got to leave it there. I hope you will call back tomorrow because I want to hear what you got to say, but we're flat out of time. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.